When the Nobel Prize-winning scientist Isidore Isaac Rabi was asked, why did he become a scientist and what gave him his drive? He answered, my mother made me a scientist without ever intending to. Every other mother in Brooklyn would ask her child after school, so, did you learn anything today? But my mother would say, Izzy, did you ask a good question today? That difference, asking good questions, made me become a scientist. The heart of the Seder is asking a good question. In fact, as typical with these things, we make a huge mistake when we start off the Seder early on with four questions. There actually aren't four questions. There's only one question, which is, Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halelot, which is, why is this night different than the other nights? The four things that we call the four questions are actually all answers, and some of them are better than others. In the Talmud, in Masechet Pesachim, the rabbis say, Pesach is all, the Seder is all about getting people, especially children, to get them to ask the good question that Professor Rabi was talking about, which is, what are you doing? And why is this important? What's going on? Really, the question is, what is different about being a Jew? And Masechet Pesachim suggests that you do whatever you can to get them to ask that question. Thus, you have the props of the Seder plate, and you've got all these other props. But, interestingly, most of what we know as the Haggadah doesn't exist for the Talmudic rabbis. Rather, what they suggest is that the essential parts of the Seder are getting the young people to ask, why are you doing this, so that you can give the answer, avadim hayinu, the answer to manishtana. We were slaves in the land of to Pharaoh in the land of Egypt, and God brought us out so that we could serve God. Now, in the Talmud, the mitzvot of the Seder, the requirements of the Seder, the halachic requirements are to get that to prompt a question. You can be as silly as you can possibly be. Use whatever props you need to be to get the child to ask so they'll listen to you so you can give them the answer. And also to eat matzah, which is the bread of affliction, and to eat maror, which is the reminder of the bitterness of slavery before we were free to serve God. The other elements of the Seder were part of the props. And what I'd like to suggest to you as you go into Passover is to think about the weird contradiction at the heart of the Seder, the seriousness alongside, in fact, in what we call the four questions, actually intertwine with the satire that lies at the heart of the Seder. So what do I mean by satire? Well, when you think about it, if the answer to the question, rather than being the prop, is, well, what makes tonight different is, now they mention matzah and maror, that's the halacha, but then it keeps going on into weird areas. Well, we dip twice, and we recline. Really? God freed us from Egypt, so that is the answer that, and of course this is not part of Avadim Hayinu, it's not part of the answer, but we think about it. We're saying, okay, so what freedom is the freedom to lie down when you eat, like the Romans and the Greeks did, or well, the Romans and Greek aristocracy, or to dip twice and to have appetizers like the Greeks did with their salt water. Karpas, of course, is a Greek word, really refers to the vegetable appetizer and salt water and the lying down. All of it comes from the Greek symposium that the rabbis in their time used as the prop. So why did the rabbis use the actual practice of our oppressor who destroyed their temple and who martyred them and persecuted them as the image of freedom? Because they were satirizing our individual images in our minds of what we think it would mean to actually be free. So they actually took, you know, freedom for in their time period, in a way, was if only we could be the Roman citizen, the Roman aristocracy, the landowner, that would be freedom. If only we could be them. Clearly, they have, gone through the world, enslaving the peoples of the world and trampling over their cultures and homelands and calling them barbarians. So the free people in this world are they. And what makes them free? What do they look like when they're being free? They lie down and they dip twice. So is that really what we mean by freedom? Imagine a Saturday Night Live skit. I mean, of any topic. Let's say it was education. Someone always dreamed, if only I could get an education. And then it's a skit where they get into university and they get to go and they get their ticket and they show up and they walk in and it's a frat party of a bunch of people drunk and vomiting on the floor or something like that. And when they say, wait a second, am I in the right place? Is this what education is? Everyone in the frat says, yeah, this is college. Excuse me while I go vomit into the toilet. And they're like, oh, so, okay, this is what I was hoping for. The same idea is what freedom appears in this part of the Seder, which is, well, this is the image that we probably harbor in our minds of what freedom would look like. And it's ridiculous. So you get to lie down when you eat, and you get to dip in salt water twice, and we get appetizers. Freedom is appetizers. Glad someone filled me in. So why would this kind of satire be at the heart of the Seder? Because on a very serious level, of course, we always go to a serious place as Jews, we are all harboring notions within our minds of what freedom would be for each of us. And part of what I suggest you do at the Seder at some point is to try to actually vocalize, externalize what you think your images are, because you may find out an interesting thing, which is, I think, the intention of the satire. So let me give some examples of my own life. What have I, you know, thought of as my images of freedom over the years? So I rented my whole life, and I always felt oppressed or beholden to the help, to the owner. You know, you can't paint the walls what you want. You have no freedom when the lease ends of whether they're going to crank up the rent and say, rent prices in San Diego have gone up 20%. You're lucky I'm only raising it 15%. With no respect for that you've been a great tenant or anything like that. And, you know, you're lucky if you can get something fixed and they return your calls. And you never know when you're going to get kicked out. I mean, that's a lot of anxiety. That certainly doesn't feel like freedom. So I thought, I know you're going to laugh for those people who know where I'm going with this, that home ownership would be freedom. Finally, I'm not working for someone else. I'm working for myself. And you find out, it really doesn't feel like freedom once you own a home. I don't think it's accidental, or it's certainly a holy coincidence that the parsha we read, usually right around or before Passover, is the notoriously most bizarre part of the Torah, which is the part about skin disease, mitzorah, and the part that no bar mitzvah kid or bat mitzvah kid wants to have to give a speech about, because you're going to talk for 20 minutes about skin disease. And one of the interesting parts of it that is the most mysterious is it says, beware of the tzarah, because it's on houses too. And it's going to ruin your house. Right when you think you got a house, it could be covered in spots. I always think of like black mold or something, but the descriptions seem maybe more magical than that. And you got to move out right when you... And once I got a home, I realized I'm enslaved to that home now. And rather than I almost long for the day when, you know, the washing machine breaks and the person who owns the landlord fixes it. So, I mean, just the other day... yet again, like, we got another leak. We just fixed a leak, and then we have this leak in the rain coming in through the roof. And this is what I've learned as a new homeowner. The leak was, when it pooled in the ceiling and dropped to the floor, it dropped right into the bathtub. So it just drained down the drain. I told Lynn, this is a sign from God that we shouldn't even open up the ceiling to see where it comes from, because I just can't take any more. I can't take any more fixes. I don't even want to know what's wrong with this house anymore. You know, and we're lucky. We're told, oh, you got it easy. Your house, it's really well constructed. It's always something. I mean, the washing machine, which is pretty new, practically overflowed last night. Once I fixed that, then the lights stopped working in that room, which seems completely unrelated. And it's always something when you own a home. So my image that finally I'll be doing it for myself turned out to not exactly feel like freedom, the image I was harboring. How about working for yourself? If only I was my own boss, and I'm sure there's someone listening to this who's chuckling, right? Which is, working for yourself is actually, can be much more stressful than working for someone else, right? When you think, finally, I'm working for myself, you find yourself working weekends, you find yourself stressing over how you're going to pay the bills, the fluctuations of everything, and the pressure. I think about, if I'm at your Seder and you say, okay, Nadav, Rav Nadav, what's your image right now? I'd say, well, I love my kids, but the most immediate sense of freedom you could give me would be like a nanny or childcare, right? So Lynn and I can go out on date night. I can get some work done. I can write an essay for the website or for the synagogue. And yet, when I finally get a babysitter and Lynn and I go out, I miss my kids. And she does too. We spend most of the time talking about them and how wonderful they are. And I feel like their childhood is flying by and I don't want to miss a moment of it. And when I actually am on my day off telling Ziva to watch TV so I can write something for a holiness fit tip or something, I'm really thinking, am I going to look back at this from the deathbed or from Yom Kippur, which is our spiritual practice for it, and say, I wish I had played with her dollhouse with her at that moment. Not that I don't at other times, but why should I miss that minute? So the freedom from childcare, I'm not sure it's really, to me, is the idea of getting babysitter just the idea of only I could lie down when I eat and have appetizers. It's not as great when you actually, it's not really freedom. It's just an image we have in our minds. I think that for many of us, I mean, I thought for years I was single, and I thought if only I could have someone who loved me and I loved in return, if I could have a partner, have a marriage, and then I would be free from some of the stresses, and they're too much to go into at the moment, of being single. But of course, you know where I'm going with that. It's not freedom to be married. It's another relationship. It's another set of obligations. It comes with its own anxieties and pressures. And it's not freedom as sometimes the image is of it. I think we do this with retirement, right? If only I don't have to work, if only I can sleep late, or if only I can travel. And then sometimes when we retire, we find out it has its own set of issues. Why is it, Rabbi, that as soon as I retired, I have physical issues? And part of the answer is because unfortunately we get old, and unfortunately, you know, they can come at any time. And while we're still young, sometimes when we retire, retirement sometimes doesn't end up being the set of free circumstances we thought it would be. How about free time? Our image of free time, going out to the mall, being able to go out and buy something. And then we have to ask ourselves, here I am shopping. Feels kind of good in some ways, if you're lucky. But am I buying this because I need it? Or am I buying this because I've been saturated since the day I was born with messages in our culture of, you'll be happy if you buy this. You'll be happy if you get that. You'll feel good. You'll get a jolt of pleasure when you purchase something. It's magical. It's like Christmas morning, but you get to do it whenever you want because that's freedom to actually go to the mall and get that thing. And you wonder, is this really free? Am I buying things I don't need? Sometimes I think freedom is freedom from doing the dishes. So I just want to get takeout food. And then I wonder, did I just waste all this time going there or dragging the kids there? I mean, sometimes I think it would have just been simpler to, you know, make a tuna fish sandwich at home and sit around the table and talk. How about friends? Sometimes I think freedom is just having friends. And then, as I mentioned on Kol Nidre and Yom Kippur, the research tells us that people today say one of their greatest sources of stress is that they can't keep up with their social relationships, especially in social media. They can't keep up with wishing everyone a happy birthday on their Facebook page and commenting on their latest post. And for some of our teenagers, they say when they go to their therapist, they say, I'm stressed out just trying to keep up with Snapchat and keep up with Facebook and keep up with returning those messages. So we think that that is freedom. And we should be asking ourselves, all of these are versions of our mental image of lying on the ground and eating appetizers because that is what we used to. There's some way we've imbibed, we've internalized an image of freedom that when we actually, it's an idol. We're chasing it. We're serving it. We're serving it all the time. You know, if only I had more money, if only I had a bigger place, if only I had more vacation time, if only I had this. And they all come with their own stresses anyway, which is really what you were trying to get away from. So what the Seder answers, we weren't freed by God to pursue the idols. We were freed by God to serve God. And the Torah is very clear. It's not but a skip, a hop, and a jump from the Red Sea to Mount Sinai, where God says, now you serve me. And one of the first things God says is, you got to keep Shabbat. And Shabbat is, by serving God through the sign of Shabbat, God's actually guiding our freedom to a holy place. God is the one we want to serve, because we actually achieve real freedom, a different kind of freedom. It's really a holiness. It's a fulfillment of our nature. It's the true shalom, the true contentment with our lot that we're seeking. We gain through serving God, not through wandering around in the desert aimlessly chasing after false idols. And so Shabbat, it's not accidental that it starts with Shabbat, because and it starts with also the commandment not to have idolatry. Through Shabbat, you can't keep up with your social media and your friends. Like, you know, I was talking to a college audience recently, and I said, and I could tell most of them weren't married, and my attitude is that wouldn't you love an excuse to tell your friends you can't get together because you have to stay home just with your dog? I mean, like, it's a beautiful thing to stay home with your dog. It's a beautiful thing to have a day in which God is giving you a taste, not of the Roman symposium, but giving you a taste of contentment, of freedom, of experiencing this world as if, from God's point of view. You're not manipulating any of it. It's a taste of the world to come. It's a taste of everything is beautiful as it is, because I can shut out the distractions and I don't have an oppressor telling me I need to do this or I need to do that. All the false gods are not allowed to have their claim. Right, I'm not thinking if only I can get childcare. I'm thinking I actually get to play with my kids and I love it. I actually maybe get to read and I love it. Not I ought to be doing something else. I just get to mindfully do what it is that I'm actually doing. So God guides our freedom to a holy place. And when you think about it, it's also true in our relationships. God doesn't say freedom is being married or not being married or whatever. God says, this is the way we do marriage. This is the way to do marriage as a Jew, to serve God through your marriage. And it's not like, you know, the evangelical saying it's all about procreation. It's about actually a healthy relationship. It's about learning how to show love. It's preserving intimacy and celebrating it. It's about sharing that time. We serve God by sharing in other ways. We share our money rather than thinking if only I had more money, I would be free. God is always telling us even the poorest person can share, right? Even the poorest person gives tzedakah. And therefore, living in the zone of holy sharing, that is the shalom that you're seeking. You get a taste of serving God is to gain humility. It's to gain perspective. So what we seek on Passover is to go back to the Haggadah. There's one question. What is this holiday about? What's different about us? What's different about being a Jew? And the answer is, we were slaves. We did not have the freedom to be ourselves. We didn't have the freedom even to be human, really, to fulfill our natures. We didn't have the freedom to even get to go down the road, because we were enslaved like Hitler did. We were enslaved as a society and worked to the bone. We were prevented from being, the men were prevented from being together with the women. We were prevented from what? Having a partnership with God to fulfill our natures, to pursue true happiness, not the false happiness of our internal idols of what freedom is. So we were slaves. We know what it was like not to get to experience what we were born to be. And God made that possible. In other words, We used to be slaves, and now we're free to serve God. But if you think what it is, it's the freedom to lie down when you eat, the freedom to be retired, freedom to have your own business, the freedom to have a babysitter, the freedom to shop at Nordstrom's, then you're actually chasing the false idol. And you're not learning what the message of Passover really is. May you have a Chag Sameach and a kosher Passover. May the bitterness of the herb remind you of what freedom from bitterness is. May the matzah remind you of our humble beginnings and of the opportunity that we have to pursue holiness by choosing to serve God.